Sister Annie thinks I'm a science project. But you know something? I guess I'm not so average anymore.
Hey everyone, welcome once again to the secret world of Cal and Jack, in which Cal and Jack watch Alex Mack. I'm Jack, and joining me as always, he's the owner of the world record for the most Alex Mack tattoos on one body. It's Callan.
I've got Alex Mack tattoos on my body. I've got one.
You've got a full body tattoo of Alex Mack that makes you look like Alex Mack.
It's a life-size tattoo of Alex Mack. So when I take off my shirt and work from behind, people are like, whoa, that's Alex Mack.
You know, people sometimes get like, people are really into the Avengers and stuff, get like a whole sleeve with all the Avengers on it.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you had a whole sleeve that had all of the Alex Mack characters on it.
Yep.
Alex Mack, Ray.
Fredrickson.
Fredrickson, yes, Fredrickson, a new character we were introduced to today in season 3, episode 7 of The Secret World of Alex Mack, which is the episode that we watched today. Feels like a bit of a turning point for me.
It did, yeah. It feels like the show almost directly said, things are getting a little bit stale, why don't we mix it up a little?
Of course, we are 7 episodes into season 3, but you might remember from a previous Mac fact that the first 6 episodes of this season were actually produced for season 2. So technically, this is kind of the season 3 premiere, which sort of makes sense because there's it does seem like they've looked over the seasons 1 and 2 and gone, I think we can do better than this.
And it also was exciting because in the opening credits, they introduced some new shots of stuff that we haven't seen yet, which I assume is going to happen in the rest of this season.
Yeah.
But it's always fun when you see those shots and you're like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen there. Probably nothing very interesting.
But hey, it's something new to look at.
It's probably another dream sequence.
But also, I mean, in this episode, we had this new character, Fredrickson, who now works at the chemical plant. Mm-hmm. There was also, I think they were doing a bit more. I mean, they've had bad CGI before and the CGI was still bad, but there was some new there was like a CGI basketball a couple of times in this one.
Yeah.
You know, there's Alex possibly making a new discovery about her powers, which might, you know, which was set up in a way that was like, here's something new that Alex can do that she couldn't do before that might come in handy this season.
Yeah. And it also felt like whenever Alex morphs into a puddle, one of her trademark powers, it's kind of like generally she's in the same position and
assume the position.
Yeah. And she then kind of morphs in a very wooden way. And she morphs in this episode still in a very wooden way, but in a slightly different, in a few different positions. Like it looks like they're trying some slightly new models or morphs. They're trying to mix it up a little bit. Maybe they got more budget. I don't know.
I think that, I feel like they got a bit more budget because there was one scene when Annie was experimenting on her morphing and she was sort of standing there with her body shape, but she was turned into a puddle and Annie like walked behind her.
Yeah.
And kind of refracted through her and stuff, which was, which just seemed like, you know, they were just showing off that effect.
Yeah.
But it was still, you know, it was still pretty cool.
Yeah. And I did notice a lot more the, she was morphing and there were like Venetian blinds behind her and you could kind of like see the light reflecting from her different shapes in the Venetian blinds, which I'm like, sure they kind of do before, but I don't know, maybe it was like a tighter shot or something. Like you could see more detail.
Not sure. Well, obviously, a lot to talk about, a lot to get excited about this episode. But before we roll into that, let's start off with one of these.
A Mac fact, a Mac fact for today. A Mac fact, a Mac fact's here to stay. I couldn't get away.
So once again, for a Mac fact this week, I'm plumbing the depths of The Secret Return of Alex Mack, the 1 million plus word fan fiction, which is set after the events of The Secret World of Alex Mack television series. This is just going to be a super quick one. I'm up to skimming through chapter 4 here of this one. We were just talking about how this episode is, you know, doing possibly some more interesting stuff with Alex's powers, you know, being a bit more sort of regimented in how they explain what they are and what they can do and what the benefits of having those powers might be. But skimming through chapter 4, I've been introduced to a new character named Jo. That's J-O. I believe she's a female who is seems to be some sort of antagonist to Alex Mack in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she appears in throughout season three or in season four of The Real Show. Jo Baker is her name. But her and Alex are having a standoff, and Alex needs to what she's done. This is kind of clever, actually, I thought. What she's done is she's built or she's stolen a some sort of like a tube or a piece of plastic or something from her dad, which she's had Annie like rig it up with sort of batteries and wires and cables and stuff to look like a taser, so that whenever she uses her zappy powers, she's got, you know, kind of like, I guess kind of like a web shooter. I don't know. But she's got this thing set up to make it so she can use her powers in public. And people won't realize that she has, you know, she has superpowers. They just think she's using a fancy taser machine.
Sure. I mean, I guess that's helpful.
Sure, why not? But I thought it was interesting. The bit of the story that caught my eye was the following paragraph, which reads, Alex reached into her backpack and used her telekinesis to find the tube she'd stolen from her dad and lifted into her hand. Then she took it out and showed it to Joe. So even in a completely made up story, text only, they don't need to film this. They don't need to, you know, do any special effects or anything. She's still using telekinesis powers to put something into her hand from within the same backpack that her hand is in.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think
just
that
pick it up
in, well, or at least like if you're doing it in the written form, you don't have the constraints of like, how are we going to do the special effects for this?
Yeah,
just do something a little bit more interesting.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, I guess it's in keeping with character for the episode.
She's done her research, this writer.
Mm-hmm.
So look, a uncharacteristic misstep from this this fanfic of Alex Mack, but I thought it was worth mentioning nonetheless.
So the fact is that Alex Mack is as boring in the fanfic as she is in real life. In real life.
In real life, IRL, yes. Mm. That's the fact.
Good fact.
Good fact. So that brings us to the episode of The Secret World of Alex Mack. We watched today season 3, episode 7, Big Ray. Unfortunately, not the type of Big Ray that you think it might be.
No, yeah. I mean, I had to pretty heavily taper my expectations because when I heard the title of the episode, I did think it was going to be like that book, that Goosebumps book, Monster Blood, where they feel where they give the hamster some of that goo and then it gets giant.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Yeah. Vaguely.
And I or like Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. Like I thought it was going to be a literal Big Ray.
Big Monster Ray.
Well, I hoped it was, but I knew that would just never happen in this in this show. But that would be good. Why doesn't the fanfic write that, Big Ray?
I know. Maybe that's a little holiday project for you, Cal.
The internet loves like big and small things.
Yeah.
It could be Big especially with Ray's. Sonic.
Imagine. Would you reckon a good spin-off show would be Big Ray and Little Lewis?
Yeah.
And Lewis goes around in Ray's pocket.
It's just reminded me of in high school, one of my friends for English class, we had to write a short story and he just wrote this really graphic like romance scene between Batman and Dracula and then read it to the class. It was really funny.
Yeah, right. Was he like, was he serious or was he?
No, I think he just thought it was funny, but he used like the language of rippling abs like four or five times. Like whenever he referred to one of their abs, they were always rippling.
I guess, I mean, Batman sort of by default has rippling abs, but I guess you could have a buff Dracula with rippling abs.
Yeah. I think if Dracula has got a kind of a bit of a JC physique, like, you know, ripped on the cross kind of deal.
Yeah, right. How many abs do I have? Six pack.
That's a terrible Jesus impression. Sorry for that diversion. What were you saying?
So Alex Mack season 3, episode 7, Big Ray, largely focuses around the relationship between Alex Mack and her best friend, Ray Alvarado, fan favorite and Secret World of Cal and Jack host favorite, Ray Alvarado.
Mm.
Basically, it's a story about them kind of examining their friendship and kind of considering the fact that people especially during, you know, the early teenage years, people grow and change, and there is a tendency for people to grow apart.
But they don't literally grow giant.
No,
which is my main criticism. But
you know, when you go through puberty, sometimes you turn 20 foot tall and stomp buildings.
I know that's how I felt when I had my growth spurt in my grade 10.
Rawr, big Helen.
Get out of my way.
And so the episode is kind of centered around this, it starts off being centered around this biology project that Alex and Ray are doing together. And Alex sort of needs it to go well because she needs to get the B+, or she needs to get a good grade for it. But Ray's kind of distracted by being the star player on the basketball team. And the big Ray comes from his nickname that all his friends give him for just being a hero and a class clown. And everyone loves Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
And they call him Big Ray. And there's a lot of this. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
A lot of chanting for Big Ray. Everyone loves Ray. So he's sort of taking his basketball career and his class clown career more seriously than he's taking his biology project with Alex.
Yeah.
So Alex gets mad at him. He gets mad at Alex because she hasn't come to his basketball games, and they kind of have a fight and a bit of a falling out. And Ray declares that their friendship is over.
Yeah. And meanwhile, at the Daniel Atron chemical plant, Daniel has hired a new slimy goon named Fredrickson, who is from the Vienna plant.
Yeah, right.
And he has a lot of similarities to Vince in appearance and mannerism. Like when he came on screen, I thought maybe he was like Vince's brother or something. But he's got that same kind of like potmark face, which is always like quite dramatically lit from underneath, and he's always kind of like sneering and like talking in this really kind of voice. I was just imagining like when they were directing him to say his lines, and he's like, "Nice to meet you. My name's Fredrickson," and they're like, "Slimier." Nice to meet you. Slime. My name's Fredrickson. Slimier. Perfect.
You nailed it, Fredrickson.
So basically, Daniel Atron, head of the chemical plant, has hired Fredrickson because she thinks that George Mack, who has been researching GC-161 and hasn't been really given any information on what it's for, she's been keeping her cards pretty close to her chest.
But she's still kind of mad at him that he won't tell her what it's for.
Yeah, so there's a weird dynamic here where she won't tell him what the chemical's for, and she's getting him to do research into it to, I guess, uncover possible applications for the chemical. And he keeps saying, if you want me to do this more effectively, you need to give me some information about it. And she's like, no, I won't give you any information about it. But also, why aren't you telling me what its applications are? And then he says, well, if you want me to tell you what the applications are, you need to give me some more information. And she says...
What does she say?
Well, she says, I can't give you the any more information, but why haven't you come up with those applications for it yet?
And so her solution for this is to hire Fredrickson to murder him.
Yeah, it's weird because it seems like initially she's hiring Fredrickson to kind of be a mole in the research lab and to get some information about if they have findings that they're not sharing. I think she suspects that they've figured something out, but they're not sharing it with her.
I think so, because I think GC-161 originally was designed to be developed as a weight loss drug.
It was a weight loss drug, yeah.
Yeah, and George Mack keeps talking about how he's lost 12 pounds in 2 weeks or something.
And he's walking around with a big sippy cup, taking big...
with his name written on it.
With his name written on it, taking big gulps and going,
yum, yum, yum.
And like bragging about how he's lost 12 pounds, which like, to be honest, he's still got dad bod and mummy like it.
There's rippling ads under there somewhere.
Well, it's rippling. If you give it a big slap, it ripples. It's rippling. So, yeah, Fredrickson kind of infiltrates the lab. And initially he's playing kind of, you know, like he's clearly an evil guy. Like he's got a green backlight. He's always kind of like got this smirk, and he's like, you can trust me, George Mack. Yeah. I'd like you to think of me as a friend and confidant. I think like actually this Now that I think about it, he may have been played by Christian Slater. You can trust me. It's just me, Christian Slater. And George is a little bit hesitant to share the details of their, you know, big breakthrough that is imminent. And this, for some reason, leads Fredrickson to decide that he's going to blow up George Mack. So I don't really understand where, like, you know, the brief changed from understand what they've learned to blow up the only people who understand what they've learned. But there is a pretty fantastic scene where Fredrickson is taking some chemicals and doing an experiment like out in a field. And then it kind of follows, the camera follows these pipes that are leading to this crash test dummy that's sitting about 20 feet away. And the dummy just like really explodes and shoots into the air about 100 feet. And he just twirls his mustache and says,
yes, everything's going according to plan.
Yeah. So, we leave Fredrickson and George Mack there with a bit of a Chekhov's GC-161.
Chekhov's exploding dummy.
Yeah.
And we return to Alex and Ray's storyline. And Ray is playing in the big championship basketball game, which is being coached by Coach Rooney, who's come back from a previous episode from, you might remember, an earlier season where Robin wasn't able to complete Rooney's runabout, the PE class obstacle course that she had to finish. So sort of the foghorn leghorn of high school PE teachers, Captain Rooney was there. So they're playing the basketball game, and the Daniel Atron team is down by 2 points. Ray gets fouled, so he's got to shoot two free throws to, you know, to draw the game and get into overtime, as Lewis so helpfully explains in his role as the commentator and cameraman of this game. And so Ray steps up, takes the first shot, lands the first shot, gets the first point, but then is sort of distracted by the fact that Alex hasn't turned up to see the game. So he gets in his own head a little bit, takes the second shot, and the ball bounces off the rim and lands and balances on top of the backboard, which is something else that happened at the beginning of the episode when him and Alex were just kind of mucking around in the gym playing basketball, and Alex made him miss the shot by making the ball land on top of the backboard. So Ray is convinced that Alex, because she's mad at him, has come and ruined his shot and cost his team the game. Mm-hmm. So he's furious, and Alex has turned up at the basketball court to kind of just talk to him and try and smooth things over. But Ray's still furious. So he storms off, accuses Alex of ruining the game for him. But then later on, him and the team are reviewing the videotape of the previous game, you know, for training purposes. And Ray notices that Alex didn't turn up to the gym. He sees it on the video that Alex hasn't turned up to the gym until after he took the shot. So she couldn't have ruined his shot. It's just that he's a bad basketballer.
Yeah, he's a bad person and just a regular size person also.
Yeah, just a regular standard size guy. And all his friends start chanting, standard Ray, standard Ray, standard Ray.
Regular size Ray.
Ray runs off. He tells one of his teammates that to let the coach know that he can't play the game, and he runs off to Alex's house to apologize to her for not trusting her, basically, and for saying that their friendship was over and that they're best friends and they should be best friends forever. And Ray accepts his apology, and to help him get back in time to play the game, Alex uses her newfound ability of being able to hold on to someone else or something else and have that morph into a puddle with her at the same time. So her and Ray puddle up together, go through the sewers, and emerge in the locker room of the Daniel Atron Junior High basketball team, getting Ray back in time to play the game and presumably win the championship.
There's something that's like, I don't know, quite like intimate about turning yourself into a puddle with another like human, especially of the opposite sex. Like you're basically what, like
intertwining.
When two become one. And we know what that song was about.
I know. It's almost like, you know, It's almost like they're Batman and Dracula.
Rippling abs.
Yeah, they ripple up together and interlock their perfectly sculpted abs and puddle up. And yeah, and there's that side of it. There's the intimacy side of it. But then there's also the thing that we've considered before, which is like, what if they, and the reason Alex, Annie figures out that Alex can probably do this with other people, but Annie doesn't want a bar of it because of, you know, she doesn't know what the outcome would be. What if they de-puddleified and they were some sort of horrible Ray Alex hybrid?
Yeah. Like the fly.
Yeah. The Ray.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I was also thinking maybe it wouldn't be a bad thing if Alex had a little bit of more Ray Alvarado in the mix. Like, you know, Ray's great. Alex is a little bit of a snore.
Yeah.
Or even Annie. Maybe if they just like, you know, everyone had a little bit more Ray, the show would be good.
Come a very long way from season one, Callan. Your opinions on Ray.
Yeah.
Remember that's true. Season one of The Secret World of Callan Jack was largely Cal ripping on Ray.
Well, I think Ray has come a long way. I've stayed in the same spot. So meanwhile, back at the chemical plant, Fredrickson has swapped out one of the chemicals that George and another callback to a previous character, Scooter, one of George Mack's colleagues. Please don't call me Scooter.
Scooter Kramer, I think his full name is.
Yeah, Scooter. Well, he's got another first name. I don't know why they call him Scooter. Probably because he scoots along all the time.
He does scoot around. He spent a lot of time on that scooter.
And George Mack is going on and on about how he's going to buy Scooter lunch at the Salad Barn, I think it's called, the restaurant that they're going. Salad Factory, maybe.
Salad House.
Salad Fingers. So they're kind of distracted and talking about lunch, and there's the Chekhov's exploding GC-161 that Scooter is about to pour into the beaker and probably blow them straight into the air 100 feet like crash test dummies. But they both decide to leave the room at that exact moment. George Mack to get his checkbook to buy Scooter a salad from the Salad Factory and
Salad Workshop.
And Scooter needs to scoot off to the toilet to do a number two. And so they hear a bang from Daniel Atron's office, and Daniel Atron turns to Fredrickson, who is kind of just standing behind her. And she is like looking menacingly into the camera and kind of having a sip of coffee in that very kind of daytime soap opera evil character kind of way.
Do you notice how she takes her coffee, Callan? Black like her heart.
Three sugars. And she's like, oh, should I be worried about that bang? And he's like, I don't think it's anything you need to worry about. Because apparently, like the best way to get rid of them is to like have a lab explosion, which would, I'm assuming, bring with it a lot of kind of investigation from different authorities. But anyway, like that's his plan. But then George and Scooter come immediately running into the room, really happy to be alive because, you know, and kind of generally unfazed by the fact that they could have died. And
they're just excited to go for lunch at the Salad House.
Really excited about the range of croutons available at the Salad Factory. Although George Mack can't have croutons because he's going low carb. So they tell Danielle that they're okay, but they've also found out what the mystery application of GC-161 is. Everyone is getting very excited, and then they explain that it's good at removing spots, like, you know, stains on your clothing.
Coffee,
and even cranberries.
Even cranberries.
And Danielle Atron is annoyed and... I don't really know what she wants from them at this point. Like, because initially I think she wants to kill them because she's afraid that they will take the secrets that they've learned off to another competitor.
Yeah. But
I'm sure there are legal, you know, things in the way to stop people from doing that. And she just doesn't trust them. It's just kind of very unclear why she or Fredrickson are trying to kill them.
I think I think just thinking about it now, I don't think I mind so much because I like the chaotic energy of it.
I agree.
I like it how it's not, it doesn't end with like previously with Vince, he would have, you know, come up with some sort of harebrained scheme that involved a robot and a, you know, security camera and something. And it would end with him screwing up and being like, doing that half like teary, like, I'm sorry, Miss Atron, it won't happen again. But this one's just Fredrickson is just like, yeah, I tried to blow him up and they just didn't happen to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, no, there was more drama to it. I just feel like they could have maybe explained a little bit better why they wanted to kill them. Like if it's just a little bit clearer that maybe there was some more clues that made it look like he was going to spill the beans to another, or that it looked like he was hiding it more. Like, because really all they're going off is that George Mack is saying that he's losing weight being on this juice diet.
Yeah.
And they think that he's like juicing on GC-161 and experimenting on himself. But like, that's not enough reason to want to blow them up.
Yeah.
And especially if they feel like he's on the edge of a breakthrough. Surely you want to find out what that breakthrough is and not just explode them.
I guess. I mean, the Fredrickson did say before he rigged up the explosion that he got all of George Mack's research paid, like all his documents about GC-161. And maybe he just hasn't had time to read through them yet, but whatever
he wants. Read them and then blow them up. Come on, Fredrickson, do your homework.
There's no time, Callan. There's no time. We need to blow them up.
Yeah, I guess so. No, I guess you're right. I guess it checks out.
But look, all in all, I thought this was another great episode.
Yeah.
Not great. Great's a bit of a stretch, but like
in the scheme of things, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
There was a moment where Alex Mack and Annie are in the garage and Annie's weighing Alex Mack and kind of saying, oh, you've grown this much and you've put on this much weight because you're kind of, you know, a growing teenage girl. And all of these changes that are happening in your body are likely to change the way that GC-161 reacts, and you might discover you can do some new things. So it was just a very loose way to kind of say, hey, we're gonna add more powers.
Hey, because she's going through puberty.
Probably not gonna use them to do anything other than clean her room. Because if she can't think of imaginative ways to use three pretty good powers already, like, we'll just throw some more at her.
Yeah, turning 14 is not going
to
help.
She can go back in time, but she just uses it to clean up her room faster.
She goes back in time to before she made a mess and just doesn't make it.
Yeah, kills the grandfather of the mess and then the mess never happens.
But then is stuck in a mess paradox.
That mess paradox. Got to look out for those.
Yeah, but I think that mention like... It was loose, and I guess it is a very, very loose metaphor for, you know, puberty and growing up and that sort of thing. And even the story between her and Ray, even though it does resolve and they're still best friends, but just the acknowledgement that, you know, your best friend doesn't have to be your best friend forever and people change and you know, relationships change. I think there was somewhere in amongst all the weeds, there was a nice message about that.
I think it's taken me 3.5 seasons or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I think I've realized what is maybe missing in this show from other superhero stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like the powers aren't a metaphor for anything, really. And like... like, I feel like superhero stuff or like horror stuff or what, any kind of fantastical, you know, fantasy or sci-fi, there is some, you know, like they don't need to be one-for-one metaphors like powers equal puberty, but they are just a way to investigate like the different kind of intangible aspects of someone's experience, often people's experiences who are somewhat marginalized or somewhat rejected by society. So like, there is like queer readings of different, you know, superpowers or, you know, race, or there are a whole bunch of different things that you can kind of explore. Femininity often, you know, like anything.
Yeah, sure.
But I do think, you know, it's probably a little bit too much to ask that my 90s Nickelodeon show like investigate more queer themes, but at least just, you know, maybe being a young woman and the kind of coming of age stuff like could be interesting, or like kind of coming into your feminine power, which is often like what fiction about like witches and stuff is about. So yeah, I feel like I would love it if that's where the show went a little bit more, just started using the powers less as just a like, hey, there's a kid and she's got powers, wouldn't that be cool? And it matured a little bit beyond the kind of power fantasy of a kid being able to like do crazy stuff, which is a very, I guess, naive or simplistic kind of reading of power stuff. And like as she starts to age and go through some of the stuff that you would go through at that age, they can start to explore it. I don't think they will at all, but I think that's my PhD thesis on Alex Mack read feminist literature. But so I'm hopeful.
Hopeful.
And hopefully there's just more explosions of crash test dummies.
Hopefully George Mack is continually put in mortal danger but doesn't really realize it.
That I love George Mack as like a kind of Mr. Magoo type character who is constantly like naively nearly missing like getting his head chopped off by it. Like that is I actually quite like this idea of George Mack as the foil for the plant rather than Alex.
George Mack in kind of a Baby's Day Out situation.
Exactly. Oh my God. Georgie's Day Out. Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess we have to wait and see. And look, I know we've covered a lot of ground there and we have run a little bit over, but for the sake of consistency from episode to episode.
She doesn't have a cat. Her mom's name isn't Pat, but she always, well, almost always wears a hat. Alex Mack wears a hat.
How about that?
I got to say, I was so engrossed in this episode, I didn't even notice the hats.
Oh, well, look, not much to report here. Alex wears a green corduroy cap. She wears a brown striped beanie. She wears like a very finely checkered kind of grey cap. And she wears a quite a nice light blue bucket hat with sort of a patch on it.
But, I remember
primary,
that one.
Primary hat of this episode was Lewis's checkerboard fedora. just a physical manifestation of his awful personality come to light, which he wears in the scene where he's commentating the basketball game.
I thought that maybe they were going for to give him kind of like one of those old-timey press hats, you know, that you'd see at like conference.
No, he just sucks.
I think it's a bit of both, but yes.
Yeah. So but that was a pretty funny scene where he was commentating and filming at the same time and jumping between the two of them.
And I thought there was a nice callback actually later in the episode because he's like commentating, but his camera is just like not looking at the action at all.
Yep.
And then later when the coach Rooney is playing back the footage to the rest of the team, he's like, can someone tell Lewis Driscoll to hold the damn camera still? I'm feeling seasick. I just thought that was
God, this kid and his personality.
It's quite good.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, look, I think that brings us to the end of episode 7 of season 3 of The Secret World of Callan Jack, in which Callan Jack watched Alex Mack. Callan, have you had a good time?
I had a really good time, Jack. Thanks for asking.
No, I'm having a good time with this show. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to follow, see if Annie's prediction comes true.
Yeah, I'm excited to have my expectations continually like not met.
Join us next week for you to have your expectations continually not met by us in episode 8 of season 3 of The Secret World of Callan Jack. You can email us on secretworldpod@gmail.com. Until next time, I've been Jack.
I've been Cal.
My best friend Ray thinks it's cool.
And my sister Annie thinks I'm a science project.
And we'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.